Welcome to the first Mumbrella Cast for 2012, sponsored by cradiodifferently.com. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Robin Hicks. This week,
radio measurement goes digital, sort of.
What on earth was Jenny Craig thinking?
The media market outlook for 2012.
Branding Australia Day.
My fellow Australians, it's been a year of calamity, natural disasters, revolutions, economic turmoil, and to top it off, un-Australianism has gone viral.
And Celebrity Apprentice. With us today in the studios of CBS Interactive is podcast producer Colin Delaney.
Hello.
And Ralph Van Dyke of Eardrum. Welcome back, Ralph.
Thanks, Tim.
It's been a while.
It has.
I'm trying to work out when it was. I've realised it must be getting on for nearly a year because it was before Cannes. Because I remember you were talking about the Strepsils ad that you'd done where you kind of did the hit and run on the the talk stations, you know, ringing up and sort of having someone cough and then say, I'm just having a Strepsil. Mm. And of course, and you actually won you won at Cannes. So
we
it was
did.
Clearly before June that you're in the
That's
in
right.
The
that was a good year for us. And mainly probably because I wasn't there. We tend to do much better when I don't turn up.
That's the bad luck, isn't it?
The years you
take the trouble and the expense to come along are the ones that.
No, exactly. No, it was great. We got a gold and a bronze that year, so it was a good one for us.
Yeah.
Mm. Another award-winning account for you guys has been IKEA.
Yes, we work with monkeys.
Yes.
So yeah, that's done very well actually. Yeah, that ad and we've done a few in the series which have done quite well at various awards.
Well, we've got an example of it, so we might as well play it.
Okay, Bradley, tell the class about your holidays.
Yeah, it was really good. My dad built us a new kitchen. It's got wooden bench tops and some stupid soft closing drawers. There was a dishwasher that was a real and even a breakfast bar. Mum thought Dad was a massive.
Get a kitchen installed without teaching your kids new words. Visit ikea.com.au. We can plan, deliver, and install the whole f***ing thing for you.
Now you're telling us that you've just recording a new radio ad for IKEA. Can you give us a sort of hint as to the content?
Yeah, well, I can because it'll be on air probably by the time this goes on. Actually, we just literally finished a pre-production meeting downstairs, and it's about decluttering and de-stressing. And the idea is the great writer Tim Green that's working on these scripts and. The idea is all these inanimate objects are shouting and causing this clutter and this, you know, mayhem. And we were downstairs deciding which voice to put to which object and shout, you know, okay, highlighter pen, should he be camp? Should he be highlighter? You know, and then there's a, you know, ring binder and all these things. And we were shouting all these things out and the guy who was serving us coffee came over and said, oh, look, gentlemen, I couldn't help but overhear your talking about a radio commercial, and just to let you know, I do voiceovers too, and if you are ever in need of someone, then here's my card. And he gave us his business card, so opportune marketing for himself, but guerrilla marketing.
And did you find yourself thinking he would make a good highlighter pen?
No, I thought he'd make a very good coffee waiter.
But the thing is as well, what other profession is there where you can sit around saying, highlighter pen, would that have a camp voice?
I know. No, there aren't many. And sometimes I do wonder if someone was recording everything that I, you know, every conversation I have during the day and the bizarre conversations that you end up, you know, talking through with creatives and studio engineers and clients about, you know, the accent on the yeah, it'd be very confusing. And my kids still have no idea what the hell I do for a job.
Now, you worked, as we were saying, with the monkeys. Other award-winning stuff, I think you partnered up with the brand agency for Perth Zoo.
That's
which
right.
Also picked up some awards.
That's
been
right.
A reasonably
yeah, we
good
got,
period.
It was the won the Silver Siren Award last year for one of the ads in that series. The slender-tailed meerkat, another inanimate, well, not so much inanimate, but inhuman object. So yes, that's a great campaign and very enjoyable to work on, and hopefully that'll continue.
And how are you doing in terms of new clients?
Oh, good. Yeah, last year we had a good year. We won a pitch for the federal government for income support.
And who else have you picked up recently?
Video Easy. And last year, also NRMA, we worked on probably what was the biggest radio campaign in the country. With Rosso was the spokesperson for that.
Ah, yes, yes, I remember it, yeah.
So that was a great campaign, and that's been hugely successful for them, and we've also won a few awards for the campaign as well, because we did some quite interesting integration ideas where the station broke down momentarily, and he came on and said, "See, anyone can break down before it happens to you." So that was a bit of a negotiation with the radio station, but they agreed to it, and it worked really well. It sounded great on air too.
And some international clients as well.
Yes, we've been doing some work for Dubai agencies.
Which Dubai? Because I used to work in Dubai.
All right, DDB, Impact DDB?
Yes. Impact BBDO.
BBDO, sorry, yeah.
But Dubai Radio, honestly, there are very few radio stations, so you'd listen to what there was, and every single ad had the film, which would be, "Hi, Jane, I've got a problem." "Really, Jane? Well, I know the solution."
"Oh, no."
"Yes, no, it's really hard." "No, but I have the solution. I'm going off to get it now," followed by a car sound effect zooming away, and every single one followed that formula without fail.
I know, and I've been over there and I've done some presentations for the Arabian Radio Network, ARN there, they all agree. They all go, "Our radio's terrible." And then you say, "Okay, let's workshop some scripts," and they bring the scripts. They go, "Yes, we've had a look at this. Thanks for your presentation. We've had a look at it. We've changed a few things." And then you're presented with that same script. And I said, "Did you not understand anything I just said?" I said, "Yeah, this is kind of what we think we need to do." And so, working with Chinese agencies, Singapore agencies, South African agencies, South Africa is the opposite. I mean, they've got some really sophisticated, great award-winning radio writers there in agencies, and they do very well.
And when it comes to picking up this sort of international business, how are you developing it? Is it through your reputation, through winning on awards and things? Or how are you getting beyond being an Australian agency?
Well, I guess the Eardrum started in London. We started it there, and we had a reputation quite quickly for award-winning work. And a lot of the creators that we worked with in London have spread out and gone to different places around the world. So they remember us and contact me. Winning awards, that's a bit of new business for us. Every time our name is on an award list, then they lodge that. And doing seminars, I'm invited to do various seminars around the world as well, just talking about radio.
Now, going back to local clients that you guys have won, we wrote a story earlier this week about radio posting a modest increase of 1.1% revenue up year on year. Just wondering, are the new clients you're bringing in, are they new to radio, or are they just bits of business you've picked up from other agencies? I mean, is your sense that more clients are warming to radio?
I think so, and often in an economic downturn, radio does seem to benefit. A lot of advertisers will usually cut from the biggest slice, and that'll often be TV.
Right.
And they'll look at more cost-effective ways of reaching their audience, and then radio often will get a look in.
Yes.
Where it hadn't maybe in the past. Retail will probably go down a little,
mm-hmm.
And so some of the direct work from the radio station will reduce some of the local advertisers, but national advertisers tend to try radio in those times. So I would expect radio to have a slightly higher growth than the rest of the market in the coming year.
Next, updating the radio ratings.
There's more to radio than music through your headphones. Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves. Check out the case study for Nissan MicroCitizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone All-Time Prepaid was done. See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
Commercial Radio Australia is to make some changes to how ratings are measured. Now, Robin, this is one that you covered this week. What's the plan?
So the plan is to introduce... Well, first of all, it's to embrace digital measurement to increase the sort of accuracy and speed at which, radio audiences are measured. Now, it's a story that I got half right. The first bit which is happening is that that diaries... The methods by which audiences are measured will go online partially.
So at the moment, people have a physical diary,
yeah.
And they have to sort of complete it.
A paper diary that they have to complete. Now, some of that is going online. The thing is, not just to make it quicker and more accurate, but also to attract younger audiences. Younger people are more likely.
They hate paper.
Yeah, they hate paper.
They can't
write. They're more likely to warm to someone who knocks on their door and says, can you actually take part in a survey if it's done online? Because it's more in tune with what they do. But what is not happening is the introduction of...
Or yet, presumably.
Not happening yet, according to my source, is that Australia will introduce a portable people meters, which are things that are worn like a wristwatch, and you can carry them around with you, and presumably it's a lot easier for you to complete to record your daily radio habits.
It gets very political, though, doesn't it? Because I know, having covered this in other markets, inevitably, because the methodology is so different, the results are different. So, for instance, you know, I think one of the theories is that any stations which are really good and invest heavily in marketing themselves, have a high profile, tend to score better on the diary system, because when people are filling it in at the end of the week, if they've not been staying up to date, they'll go with what's top of mind rather than what they really were listening to. So the argument is that could skew it, you know, so the smaller players may actually come up on a meter system. So you can see why there might be some resistance, because inevitably it will mean changes at the top.
Yes.
Or it might do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There doesn't seem to be a perfect system. In the UK, they're trialling a mobile recording device, which picks up habit radio use in cars.
By mobile,
for
you
example.
Mean literally like a mobile phone type
device. Yeah, a mobile phone type device. But the biggest problem is in Australia, and I think in the UK, is cost. Really, really, really expensive to trial. There's not even a trial yet of portable personal meters because it's so expensive.
Do you think it will happen?
I think it will absolutely. But my source is a very good one, insists that it will absolutely happen, that a hybrid system, part paper, part online, part portable, will be introduced eventually when Commercial Radio Australia can afford it.
Now, Ralph, as part of the radio industry, how comfortable are you with the system as it stands at the moment?
Well, I think it's the best option at the moment. I don't think it's perfect, and I think that there's a lot of pressure from the media agencies to change it, and I think that is really the main issue. The radio industry needs to be seen to be doing something, to be changing, to catching up with the rest of the industry, or other media. And I think that's the most important thing. It needs to be seen to be making steps forward. And I think it's a great thing that they're trialling the online version. It'd be even better if the people meters were, if it was cost effective to do. You'd think that arguably, radio should be easier in some ways, because you don't have to strip out the people that don't hear. Everyone who listens to radio hears everything. So that outdoor, you have to separate the people that were exposed to it from the people that actually saw it. But if you're listening to the radio, you hear everything. You listen to the things that interest you, and that's where good creative comes in.
I suppose
in
the issue around meters is people meters is, for instance, that thing of someone leaves, you know, takes off their watch and leaves it by the radio, and they, you know, when they pop out and it registers listening that didn't happen, or someone someone forgets to take it with them so that it's not registering. So you get all of those kind of risks of sort of false positives or failing to pick up listening, I suppose.
I think so. And, no system will be perfect. A hybrid is obviously, is everyone's opinion, in everyone's opinion, the best option for different demographics. They're more comfortable with different ways of measuring it. But, as long as there's a way of actually determining which stations are heard across the day, then that's going to be your listening figure.
So what will happen next?
Well, eventually, when the price for people meters comes down, they'll be introduced, and you'll have the hybrid system, which as Ralph you mentioned, has already been introduced for outdoor industry and also online, that all use a hybrid system. I think that's the future.
Next. Who will advertise with Kyle and Jackie O?
This week, the radio shows return to the air after the Christmas rating break. That includes the Kyle and Jackie O show on Today FM in Sydney. And the new sponsor, for the first day at least, was Jenny Craig. Tim, so you broke this story. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, there were several journalists, I suspect, listening to the first day back for Kyle and Jackie O, so... We might have been the first one to put the story up, but looking at the stories that went up over the following minutes and hours, there are plenty of people kind of monitoring, I think. So to to recap for the for those who don't remember the Ferrari at the end of last year, in about the sort of last 2 weeks or so of the season last year, Kyle went on air one morning, I think it was a Monday morning, and attacked a journalist called Alison Stevenson, who the night before had written a story about the poor reaction on social media to the Kyle and Jackie O show that they'd done on TV that night. Now, subsequently, it had appalling ratings as well, so that kind of weakened his case. But he made this, you know, really outspoken attack, and amongst the attacks was he called her fat, and some far nastier things as well. But the fat thing became relevant because Jenny Craig turned up as the returning sponsor. Now, one of the kind of things which has been a bit lost in the debate is the difference between sponsors and advertisers, certainly in radio. So you saw a lot of the media coverage kind of interchanging the two words. Holden had been the sponsor last year, and then there were lots of advertisers. Holden pulled almost straight away, and the advertisers followed very quickly. So it was clearly going to be a story whoever the first sponsor was when they came back. And that turned out to be, as I say, Jenny Craig, which seemed unusual, partly just because the attack had been kind of fattest is a horrible, rubbish word to use, but had been kind of, some of it was fattest, so it didn't seem like a particularly good fit from that point of view. And something which we were slow to make the point on, and other coverage was as well, it was actually sort of people in social media first made it. He'd made an attack on Magda, and again, I apologise for the pronunciation.
Szymanski.
Yeah, that was who he'd said would lose more weight in a concentration camp. Mm. Now, at the time, she had been the Jenny Craig spokesperson, so that didn't seem like a good fit. What did seem like a good fit, and I guess there was a logic behind it, was Mel B is the new face of Jenny Craig, and she is a regular contributor to that show. So clearly they'd be able to integrate some stuff, and you know, you can almost see what the opportunities might be if they, you know, if they stuck with it, you know. So I you know, sort of, certainly, I don't know what you think, Robin, but it struck me that there were things they could have done to build around that idea.
Yeah, perhaps given the chance. I mean, Mel B, isn't she not a feminist, but she's pro-women's rights. Yeah, wouldn't it? You can sort of imagine some
girl
sort of,
power.
Yeah, some sort of PR event arranged around it, you know, and Mel B's had a face-off with Kyle sort of thing. And it could have done wonders for the brand, I think. It was sadly a missed opportunity that was sort of submerged beneath the sort of weight of response from angry people before they were given a chance. Ralph, what do you see as the...
Well, I was surprised that they came back with any sponsor so quickly.
Right.
I thought that the best approach would be for the show to come back, for them to make self-effacing comments about the cock-up last year, and for Kyle to broadcast from a monastery for a couple of... Something where they turn it into a gang, oh, yeah, fair cop, I made a mistake, and you know, we've got nothing else to play, so we'll talk for a bit, and make some jokes about it.
Yes.
For a couple of weeks, things to die down, things to get slowly back to normality, and then introduce a sponsor. Yeah. But from day one... That pressure group is very well organized.
Change.org.
Yeah, and the petition's been started by a woman in Melbourne who can't even get the radio show. So go figure.
Although in fairness, don't forget they do the Hour of Power, which is nationally networked in the afternoons as well. So
yeah.
So that does go to the metro audience, even though different advertisers.
Sure, I guess that I was expecting that to happen, but to go back as if nothing had changed and this all happened and is all history, I think was a bit optimistic. And and I thought that as long as it stays out of the papers,
yes,
things would get back to normal. But yes, the Jenny Craig incident has just fueled the flames again, and it's going to be a very brave advertiser to go back into the show. And it's going to be a very, very strong Southern Cross Austereo to stick with what is a winning formula. That's the problem. It is a successful show. It generates, attracts listeners. And what more do you want? But they've got to weigh that up with the amount that they're losing.
It was interesting. I know we always talk about social media, but it was interesting this time that, to me, you know, clearly wasn't party to the internal conversations going on at Jenny Craig, but the moment where it started looking unsustainable for them was looking at the Jenny Craig Facebook page, but because it was just labelled Jenny Craig, most people who were making these angry comments didn't realise it was the Jenny Craig US Facebook page. So suddenly the taint was spread into the US brand, which obviously is a big brand. So you can imagine the phone calls that probably came from US head office to Australia.
Yeah.
And by that night, it was gone. Because that was the other thing, it was the speed. You know, by that evening, they pulled.
Yeah, advertisers will have to come back to the show eventually, otherwise there will be no show. Rav, would you recommend a client returned to the show now? Or if not, when? And what sort of client do you envisage returning?
I would recommend that they wait. You know, personally, if one of my clients asked me for, you know, to recommend whether they should go back in the show or not, no, I'd say wait until it's out of the newspapers and once the press have stopped covering it. But, you know, and as I said before, if once the show's back on air and they need to talk about it, they need to, you know, get it out in the open and, as I said, crack a few jokes about it. And then it makes everyone relaxed and then they move forward from there. But it's too big a show for an advertiser to ignore. It's a very effective way of reaching a lot of people.
Tim, what comes of one of the highest paid presenters when no one will advertise around him?
I suppose the probably trickier conversation comes when it's time to renegotiate the contract. Now, it's not that long. I'd say it's only been a year or maybe a bit less since Kyle re-signed. Now, I could be wrong, I've not been back. I've got a funny feeling that was a 3-year contract. So if so, then that clearly puts us stereo in a tricky position.
Do you know what he was on?
They never said. I mean, the speculation was around $1 million a year. You know, that was sort of widely reported and never denied. So certainly probably the best, maybe with the exception of Alan Jones, certainly the best paid music, radio music presenter in Australia, I would have thought, for Kyle. Jackie O would be on a, you know, decent wedge yourself. But yeah, the issue is they might well struggle to take them off the air. They probably would have to pay out the contract unless there's been a material breach, which one would presume this hasn't been. You know, so yeah, the question is what happens next. You know, do they carry on bringing in the audiences, things calm down and they go back, and then it's still a worthwhile investment, you know. If the advertisers stay away, clearly there's no place for him. But if they gradually come back, which they will, then, you know, there are more chapters to be written because there will at some point be another scandal.
And in the meantime, there are other radio station breakfast shows that advertisers can look to. Fitzy and Whipper on air, Rosso and Claire have got a breakfast show now that's sounding pretty good.
Do you know what? I've not heard much of it. You've had an opportunity to listen to some of it, have you? Yeah.
It seems to be the energy level is lifted. Claire seems to have come into her own, and I think she was a little bit subdued with
Andrew Rushford. Andrew.
I think Rosso's a great broadcaster, and I think that they'll pick up listeners who are thinking, well, you know, he's that famous bloke that I used to listen to, and there's that familiarity, I think, will work.
And is there a chemistry between the two of them?
I think so, yeah.
So that's come quite early then, because sometimes it doesn't really come naturally yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's early days. I think it's only a week or two. Maybe.
Yeah, they came back on air a week or two before everybody else, didn't they? So they
decided
to get bedded in before the rating season officially began.
I think the key is that they don't regress to just Claire being the foil, because, you know, Rosso will do that, you know, and that'll be a bit, you know, a bit samey after a while. He needs to sort of expose more of himself the way that she does, you know, talks about her life and her, you know, she's very honest, and he needs to start bringing some of that, I think, into the show as well.
Yeah. Rosso said that he's now sort of pitching or talking to a slightly more mature audience to what he did in his earlier days, obviously.
Yeah.
Did you sense a more perhaps grown-up Rosso on air now? Or?
I think so. I think he's more true to himself, as you said, now. I mean, I've worked with him a few times, and the way he's on air on mix is probably more similar to the way he is off air.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to suit him well. He doesn't have to try.
Yes. Right. Next, the agency's outlook for 2012.
Thinking of working at an ad agency? Looking for the best creatives to develop your next ad campaign? Look no further than the Mumbrella Creative Agency Review. 148 pages of hardcore industry intelligence to help you make your next big agency decision. Visit book.focalattractions.com.au/MCAR.
To kick off the year, we decided to call up a few of our favourite media agency bosses. It wasn't at all just because it was a quiet news day and it's one of those things you do at the start of every year, to ask them what their predictions were for the Australian media market in 2012. Robin, what's the sentiment?
Well, yeah, what struck me was the almost violent disagreement between the four people that I spoke to. Dan John, CEO of Icon, which was our media agency of the year, wasn't too optimistic. He said that caution was due to nervous consumers. He expected the market may grow by just 0.8%, so basically flat, saying that indeed that might be enthusiastic.
0.8 is a very specific amount.
Yeah, I'm not sure how we worked that out. But yeah, so a bit of gloom from Dan Johns. On the other end of the spectrum, there's PhD MD Toby Hack. He expected the Olympics to boost the market by about 5%. So, yeah, more optimism there. And Max's boss, David Gaines, was similarly optimistic, forecasting 3.5%, while Match boss, John Preston, said, excusing the Olympics 2012 will be patchy, but would be happy to be proven wrong. So Ralph, a lot of disagreement there. Are you confident? Are you optimistic? Or are you perhaps slightly more cautious than that?
Yeah, I feel more cautious. Caution is... I feel a lot more cautious about the coming year than I did last year.
Right.
I've got friends who are in banking and they are, you know, talking doom and gloom, and they have for the last couple of months. They're saying the beginning of this year is going to be terrible, a lot of redundancies. They're expecting the house market, you know, the property market to slide more significantly. So I've been hearing from them a lot of doom and gloom. From the media industry, there's flat at best. From the radio industry perspective, as I said earlier, they tend to do slightly better than the rest of the industry in these times. So I'm hoping for a small increase. That would be great. It's going to be a very interesting start of this year, and not a great forecast, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, on the news front, we've seen on the publishing side, we wrote a story recently about the Finn AFR closing the magazine MIS, and also suspicions that another magazine within that stable may follow. At the end of last year, we wrote about Ogilvy, one of Australia's biggest advertising agencies, letting a few people go. So it seems to be, as far as I can see, a matter of a bit of shrinkage going on. So Tim, what sort of impact do you think the Olympics will have? Do you think it's, as John Preston suggested, that there's a bit of hype around the Olympics that won't deliver that spike that everyone hopes it will do?
Yeah, I mean, the famously, Martin Sorrell always talks about the quadrennial year. So every 4 years, you get it's an election. It's a US election year, so there's big advertising spend in the US, and then there's big advertising spend around the Olympics as well, and that always delivers an uplift. So I guess that's what the thinking is around, really, is okay, well, how much will it be this time? I suspect that'll be good for Europe in particular. I'm sure that it'll, you know, the UK media market has been utterly in the doldrums, so you know we'll finally see some reason for advertising spend uplifting there. Here I don't know. I'm not so sure that the Olympics will have a massive effect on spend.
I was wondering, does that come afterwards, once we get our Olympic heroes? Does everyone start sponsoring sort of after whoever it is, Grant Hackett or, you know, Kathy Freeman, obviously older names, but have got their gold, spending around that?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I think the two-week period of the Olympics will see the spike. But, yeah, you're right. It depends on how well Australia do. They usually do pretty well.
I guess there's so much planning, though, isn't there? Most of the Olympic campaigns are being planned now. Are you having Olympic conversations with clients yet?
Or no.
Have they already happened? Or?
No, not yet. No.
Is that because the radio everyone always leases it to the last
minute?
It's
a little more short term.
There'll be a panicked phone call about a week beforehand.
That'll often happen. And you know, that's the one of the benefits, but also the pain in the ass of radio, is that you can be on air tomorrow. So from a creative perspective, it's a real annoying, feature of the medium. But I think radio will benefit. I think a lot of media money will be moved to that period. Whether there's extra money over the year, I'm not so sure about.
It'll be interesting to see what sort of themed sort of TV programming comes up as well.
Yeah, I spoke to Andrew Denton for Encore the other day, and I asked him what we could expect for 2012 from the Zapruder's other films slate, and he said that they're looking to do a Gruen Olympics type show.
Interesting.
And he went on to describe the Olympics as like the biggest marketing event on the globe, so it could be whether. And I asked,
is it like the Super Bowl of advertising?
Yeah, I asked, is that going to be a nightly thing, sort of like Roy and HG did, which was fantastic a few years ago, or they seem to do it every Olympiad. And he sort of he was cagey, but he said, we'll wait and see. We're still, once we worked it out, you might know a bit more.
Well, they've done some spin-offs to Gruen.
Yeah, so Gruen Nation.
Gruen Nation, which was the election one. Gruen Planet, which is more around the world of spin. So,
yeah, I mean, it's a perfect fit, isn't it? Yeah.
Sport in general, I think there'd be more material in sport and advertising and marketing and sport. And you'd imagine that would have a good resonance with the Australian market.
It's going to be interesting with the time difference as well, isn't it? Because a lot of this is going to be happening over breakfast, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, the actual live sports side
of things.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah. Another potential, Philip, is it could be an election year in Australia, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not sure that elections here will have quite the same sort of boost effect as they will, for example, in the United States.
Oh, I think they do. And right. I think that I was going to get to that. I think that now that you'll see more government money coming through, I think, from this year going forward.
Right.
I think that.
And radio will be a big beneficiary.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that tends to be government public service messages that also happen to tell everyone what a good job the government's doing, as opposed to political party spend.
Absolutely,
when the election is officially there.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the bit that we don't have super PACs here, do we? So there aren't those big, multi-million sort of budgets when it comes to pure political spending.
No, exactly. So no, it'll be sort of government department advertising.
Have you ever done any political advertising at all?
We've done a bit. Yeah, we at one point actually we were working for two opposing parties at the same time because we were working for an agency producing the work that they had written and working directly with the other side. I won't do that again.
How did you manage to keep the plate spinning on that?
Well, we told both of them, said this is, but we aren't, because we weren't involved in any of the strategic conversations with the agency. We were literally casting and directing the work that they had written. This was a number of years ago.
And, did you use the same voiceover artist for any of that?
Yeah, no.
As the highlighter pen.
Next, who's more Australian, Sam Kekovich or Vegemite?
So Sam Kekovich has appeared in the latest Australia Day ad for Meat and Livestock Australia. Let's have a listen.
My fellow Australians, it's been a year of calamity, natural disasters, revolutions, economic turmoil, and to top it off, un-Australianism has gone viral. It's been spreading faster than pics of Pippa Middleton's rump on Facebook, and things have really hit rock bottom in popular culture. For example, the gossip mags have really gone googly-eyed over Shane Warne, who went from bowling overs to make overs to get his leg over, bleaching his pearlies for Hurley. The old Warney would never have chosen a starlet over a cutlet, or tweeting over eating. And is it any wonder Charlie Sheen's lost his sparkle, when he's always off his chops? A lack of lamb has led to a litany of lamentable behaviour. We go gaga over a lady that wears a dress made out of lamb, instead of eating it. We gawk at Kim Kardashian's exposed nuptials. We salivate over the TV trial of Michael Jackson's doctor. If only Jacko had popped chops instead of pills, he might still be with us, and a lot less pale and anemic. And don't get me started on reality television. What kind of society are we living in, when you can win one of those dancing talent shows without doing the lambada? Popular culture's so un-Australian. I've decided to create popular culture instead. So, I'm changing my tune. I'm releasing my own chop song.
If the Dalai Lama can spray kormas instead of camera MasterChef, why can't I reincarnate myself as a chop star? Should that be an Australian? Get Barbie Girl to the top of the pops and make Lamb your number one on Australia Day. You know it makes sense. I'm Sam Kekovich.
Charlie Sheen is off his chops. Brilliant. So what you heard there was the tail end of a greater campaign that attempts to put a rewritten version of 90s hit Barbie Girl to the top of Nova's Australia Day countdown. So, Ralph, are you a fan of the latest Sam Kekovich outing for Meat and Livestock Australia?
I am. I think it's a real step forward for the campaign. Last year, I wasn't really too fussed by what they'd done. I didn't really think it really moved the campaign forward. This year, it really has. I love the video. I wish more of the video was incorporated into the advertising. I don't know how much of... I've only seen the sort of the Australia Day announcement, you know, where you're sitting behind the desk and then they just reveal the set at the end of the ad. And I assume that that was the 60-second ad. I wish more of the video and the song was used as part of the advertising, because that's terrific. And using Barbie Girl, I mean, perfect. I mean, it's really kitsch and over the top, but I think it's moved the campaign forward and done it well.
And it's funny, isn't it? Because we had rumours a month or two back that we checked out that the campaign was going to get axed this year.
Yeah, well, Sam Kekovich was going to be at least removed from the Australia Day address. But yeah, no, he survived that potential rethink. But yeah, no, there's a few criticisms of the ad that it was a little garbled, that the wording was great, but he'd sort of rushed through it.
Yeah.
And it was hard to detect.
It's true. I think there are some words, but even in the address, that's often been the case. They do get him to speak very quickly. They try and cram a lot in. And they've subtitled the video.
Right.
So you can catch everything. And I'm sure that was probably a decision they made afterwards.
Yes.
I'll tell you what has been good is Facebook. They've been, if you like MLA on Facebook or like Sam Kekovich, there are some pretty funny updates most days from Sam, apparently from Sam, you know, clearly written by the copywriters. But, you know, and he's sort of taking on some quite topical stuff as well. So
his opinion on various things.
Yes, exactly, okay. Sort of the day or the week. So, yeah, no, so that's
thought for the day from Sam Kekovich.
Yeah, no, it's been good. So that's been an impressive little addition this year.
Yeah, no, I think it's done well. Hats off to BMF for a great job.
The song is a much larger part of the campaign in which they've taken Aqua's... Barbie Girl. It's been remixed by the Jungle Boys, or rewritten to try and get to Nova's Australia Day countdown. Tim, my question is for you. I went on to Nova today or yesterday, trying to find where the countdown was. I couldn't find anything to vote for other than their usual Fresh 40 countdown. My question is this all a big ruse? What's the likelihood of this song getting to number one?
You mean, can Nova be bought with commercial dollars?
Oh, well, as God forbid a commercial station get bought like this. But also, there's a whole page on nova.com.au that is dedicated to this campaign, and it's like, vote for it to go to number one. I mean, I know that Triple J have a Hottest 100 on Australia Day.
I don't think this features in it.
I don't think it does either.
It'd be interesting to see if it does. Yeah, I mean, I suppose what was interesting is one of our other regulars, Jason Davis, Jabba, wrote a column for us a couple of editions ago in Encore magazine, our sister title, in which he talked about the process of what it's like to be a presenter. And I know he was at Nova at the time, and how miserable it was. You know, you're on air and people are ringing in to vote for what they want to be number one that night on, you know, a playlist that's already been settled several hours before. So there is some suggestion that these top 40s aren't always purely statistical.
No, well, I mean, as I said, I was on the website. So on the Fresh 40, Flo Rida was at number one, and I scrolled all the way through to number 40. And so far, Sam and Barbie Girl haven't made it onto that list. No one's voted for them.
I feel so unhip. I don't even know what the Flo Rida song is.
I don't know what it is either. It's probably...
I was trying to bamboozle you into singing a bit.
No, it was... I don't know it.
Here's a challenge. Wouldn't it be fantastic if we were able to galvanize support and get the Barbie Girl song to the number one position in the Triple J Hottest?
We should do it.
That would just be fantastic, because they're pretty honest with their system. If you vote for it, it goes in. They're pretty. They've got a lot of integrity.
They're the ABC. They have to have integrity.
Yeah. So if we could get a bit of support,
get an ad onto the public broadcaster.
Let's get on change.com. Start a petition.
And Vegemite is also getting with it for Australia Day as well, Robin.
Yeah, the spread has renamed itself simply Australia in the lead up to Australia Day, with 10 stories of quirky Australians found in a previous campaign, Toast of the Nation. So, Ralph, do you like the idea of, well, cans of Vegemite being rebranded Australia? Do you like the idea in principle?
I don't. Why not? I think it's too obvious. It's not enough wit, and it's not subtle enough for me. I think it's, and for that reason, it's quite un-Australian.
Right.
I think it's, if they want to show how Australian they are, I think they need to choose an insight or demonstrate something that, you know, illustrates their understanding of Australians and how they tick, and better than any other brand. They, you know, and they're in a great position to do it. But just to say Australia, it's like Apple putting on their packaging stylish.
Yeah,
what? You don't have to do that. You are Australian.
Or Marmite rebranding itself England on St. George's Day.
Yeah, it just feels too obvious. I think that it's not quite smart enough for me.
I suppose also it's just that, is there any, and I know people use this as a way of kind of beating the owners now, but you've got Kraft, an American company, owns Vegemite. The idea has been come up with a JWT, which is a, you know, J. Walter Thompson originally, you know, so absolutely not an Australian advertising agency, now owned by WPP, headquartered in Ireland. So none of it is very Australian in truth.
True, but I think the consumer's not going to know that. But I think that the...
But will the consumer be stupid enough that when they see the Australia on the shelves, I think, oh, well, it's Australia Day, we might as well, we'll get in the spirit.
Or they're going to go, oh, shit, where's the Vegemite?
They were stupid to request all their names on our website for the Coke can, so they quite possibly could.
Interesting you should mention Coke cans, because I spoke to Richard Munts, the ECD of JWT Melbourne, which made this decision to rebrand the Vegemite cans, tins, Australian. He said that, yeah, he felt
jars.
Sort of trumped, jars. He felt trumped by the Coke campaign. Because it's sort of similar, you know, the Coke Share a Coke campaign where consumers' names are put on cans of Coke. And he thought that was a bit of a spoiler. But sorry, go back to Vegemite. Tim, deja vu. Vegemite has done this sort of thing before, hasn't it, renaming itself?
Yeah, well, there was the whole iSnack 2.0 debacle where they invited the reader to vote on the name for the new flavour. And they, I think they were sort of, you know, they picked from 5 or 10 finalists. And the one that they chose was iSnack 2.0, which became such a laughing stock at the time. They withdrew it after about 2 days and then did another vote, and then I think it was Cheesy Bite was the winner in the end.
Much better.
Yeah, so there is that. I've just thought, actually, I wish I'd done when you could do the name your own Coke can, where you actually could get them made up in the Westfields. We should have done an iSnack 2.0 on a can. But
but what you were referring to before, I mean, with that conundrum, Vegemite came out rather unscathed from iSnack, but Kraft copped it,
yes.
Didn't they?
Yeah, no, that's a really fair point, actually. Yeah, it was the American masters messing with Vegemite.
Yeah, how dare they? I'm still going to continue eating my dark spread every morning, though.
Yes,
I think Coke is, to me, a better idea because it's about the consumer and it's share a Coke with, you know, Steve, Phil, Robin. Yeah. Sadly, not Ralph, you'd have thought.
Nor Colin.
Still no Ralph. Robin with a Y, though. They still have Robin with an I.
There was a Rudolph. You could just scribble a couple.
And a Wolfgang.
Well, this thing, in the latest lot, there might still be no Ralph, but there is now a Wolfgang.
Great, I'll change my name.
Yeah.
Be easier.
Next, Celebrity Apprentice, round 2.
There's more to radio than music for your headphones. Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves. Check out the case study for Nissan MicroCitizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone all-time prepaid was done. See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
This week, the new cast was announced for Celebrity Apprentice, and it includes an impressive coup in David Hasselhoff. Joining the Hoff is Bert Newton's wife, Patty, AFL player Jason Akermanis, comedians Vince Sorrenti and Fiona O'Loughlin, Ian Dicko Dixon, TV presenter Charlotte Dawson, and others not quite as celebrity-ish. Ralph, did you get into Celebrity Apprentice last year at all?
No, I didn't, but it was loads of people I know talked about it and were loving it, and I wish I had seen it. It's now turning into Big Brother meets The Office, which sounds fantastic. You know? With those guests, I think it's going to be great. I mean, the Hoff is such a media whore; he will just give and give and give, and he will play up to everything as long as you pay him.
Right.
So I think he'll be brilliant. Patsy is just, you know, hysterical, a bit of a, you know, she's funny.
right. Yeah.
to observe. Yeah. Yeah. Whether she realises it, I don't know. But so I think it's going to be good, and I will definitely tune in for this one.
Yeah. I looked in the photo in the Daily Telegraph this week as well, sort of the cast being unveiled. And when I read the caption first of all, it got to Fiona O'Loughlin. I misread it as, in brackets, obscure, which seemed a bit harsh. But in fact, it's because as she was walking along, just obviously as the photo was taken, Hasselhoff had walked in front of her. So it actually said obscured. But I felt quite sorry for her that she didn't even make the cast photo in the Telegraph.
Now, Tim, I'm aware, correct me if I'm wrong, that you love this show.
Yeah, I was a big fan of it, actually. Yeah.
What do you think, your hopes for this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it started off, you know, very much as a kind of, I mean, it is in many countries around the world now, but as a UK and US phenomenon. And that was probably where it was the biggest hit. So you had Donald Trump in the US, you had Alan Sugar, now Lord Sugar, in the UK. And started off very much as, you know, ordinary people. And that was the model we had here as well. We, you know, the first year of it with Nine, which will be about getting on for 3 years ago now, didn't rate that well, you know, and some of the characters were interesting, but maybe not interesting enough. Whereas I guess, you know, Celebrity Apprentice, you have that shorthand where the audience already has a connection and familiarity with the characters, obviously, because they are celebrities or nearly celebrities. So you're not starting from scratch. So I think you probably get into it a lot quicker, which obviously, you know, in this kind of sort of short-term rating terms, probably helps. But I suspect that was what the, you know, what really made the difference. You know, it's kind of, yeah, and all these characters kind of came through in different ways. You know, you kind of, you know, like, for instance, you know, Pauline Hanson probably helped rehabilitate herself. Denny Hines did the opposite. She came across as the sort of pantomime villain, I suppose. Max Markson probably didn't...
Played himself?
He played himself. I would say he didn't do himself any favours, but that doesn't... Those two...
There you go.
Yeah, those two don't actually contradict each other, yeah. I know. But yeah, so it's kind of... I mean, it's been good for a few careers. So Jacinta Campbell, you know, sort of formerly seen just as a sort of beauty queen, has, you know, got herself a bit of a media career out of it. Didier Cohen, the kind of model, is, you know, I think he's now been signed up for the Kyle and Jackie O show as a sort of, you know, regular on that. So
he'll be
so
thrilled with that.
He will be thrilled with that, I'm sure. Yeah, it's the opportunity to get out of bed early, if nothing else. So yes, from that point of view, it's been pretty good. Couple of thoughts around people who have been cast. I mean, obviously, the sort of Patty Newton thing, the last time we really saw her was when she was talking about Matthew Newton's kind of illness, and it, you know, sort of, and it almost seemed that she was sort of throwing him to the wolves to protect sort of Bert's career a bit, you know, which, so it'll be interesting to see whether this is a bit of rehabilitation, because there's a slight sort of backlash to that. And of course, Dicko, suddenly the I'm sacking myself from Can of Worms.
On Channel 10.
On Channel 10. You suddenly think, well, is it that at all? Or is it that the contract for Celebrity Apprentice was a bit better? yeah, just being cynical. I mean, the Can of Worms press release was nicely done, wasn't it, Colin? I think you liked that story.
Yeah, it was a nice touch, but there certainly seemed like there was something else in the works, and of course that's seemingly come out.
Yeah. Ralph, are you like a lot of our guests on the podcast, and that you're not a great consumer of TV? Looking at what's coming up this year, are there any TV shows that catch your eye?
In answer to your first question, yes, probably. We're more of a box set IQ.
Yes.
We do watch TV, but not, you know, in real time.
Right.
So we've been watching Downton Abbey and some of those sort of girly things.
Yes.
But it's been great.
Yeah.
This year, was the next question highlights for this year?
Yeah.
No, I couldn't tell you.
Right. Okay.
You're going to regret asking Telf that question.
Well, more to the point, radio listening habits.
Yes, radio listening. I'm a bit of a tard, as you can imagine. I need to listen to most of the commercial stations across the week. But for pleasure, I will listen to podcasts and This American Life, Radio Lab.
Hey, This American Life. I can't believe that I didn't talk about this before. Did you get to see
yes,
Ira Glass?
I did. Yeah.
Wasn't he good? So part of the Sydney Festival, he came and spoke. He sort of did one at Town Hall, and then that sold out instantly. So they backed up a second one sort of later
straight
that
after.
Night.
Yes. Yeah, no, it was terrific. I'm a huge fan of his. The style of the show. And it was reassuring to hear how much effort goes into it, because I often listen to it thinking, God, how did they do that?
Now,
how
for those who don't know This American Life, maybe give some context of how it works.
It's, well, it's a 45-minute, one-hour radio show, which is, I guess, an audio version of the best magazine article or press or story you've heard that week or read. They will have a theme each week, and they will send reporters out around the states to create a story, and they'll break it into different acts. They'll have a theme. For example, Neighborhood Watch is the current one, which sounds really dull, but they follow a woman who's trying to find some help for her autistic adult son, because she's getting on and she'll eventually pass away, and she's trying to find neighbors that'll look in on him. So there's that really honest story.
And it's like a really sort of sad, melancholy story, isn't it?
It is, but then they'll balance it up with a blind guy who's taking his baby for a walk for the first time, you know, and the sort of the feelings he has about being able to have that sort of freedom.
I don't know, the point at which he nearly got hit by the car and and his cane got broken kind of didn't feel that much.
You didn't laugh? No. No, it's but the stories are amazing, and they're beautifully put together. They spend a lot of time and energy, and they will research a story for months for a weekly show, and so there's an awful lot of work goes into it, and I'm very happy to support them. I donate money, and that's how it's funded.
And it was an amazing response, considering this is an American podcast, to get probably 4,000, 5,000 people along.
Yeah,
who knew? You know, just about everyone in the room seemed to know it, and probably more from the podcast rather than the Radio National broadcast.
True.
And it was like a rock star welcome for a radio producer, wasn't it?
A geeky radio producer turned journalist editor. There's hope for... everyone.
I saw a fantastic film night in which, because he also has a TV version, which he did for a while, and I saw a fantastic version of that in which there was a story about a young guy who found love at the same time as he was becoming degenerative disease, and to the point where he couldn't speak. And Ira asked him if you could have anyone to do the voiceover for this piece, to tell your story, who would it be? In fact, rather than me talk about it, let's just take a listen.
So if we were to replace your voice with somebody's, like, what would you want it to be? This process is just incredibly slow. Typing out this one sentence answer takes over 3 minutes.
I totally want either Johnny Depp or Edward Norton, whoever is available, because either way, they are both badasses.
Ladies and gentlemen, reading from Mike's emails, Mr. Johnny Depp.
When I was a kid, I could sit up and drive a power wheelchair. I could breathe on my own, so I played outside.
You know, he's now in his 20s, but he's also a great writer. And so, coming from Johnny Depp's mouth, but written really witty and, you know, self-deprecating. It was a fantastic clip. But one question I do have is there much going on in a lot? I don't get the chance to listen to a lot of ABC radio, not as much as I'd like. I do remember listening to The Morning Show years ago on Triple J, and they had very similar stuff to Ira Glass's work.
No, so the question is there much of that happening in Australia?
Yeah, and why isn't there more of it?
It's expensive. Very expensive to produce talk radio to the quality of This American Life. And I think that simply it isn't the budget. So I'm sure there's the willingness, and I imagine there's the talent. We made radio programs for the BBC, and it became a bit of a labor of love. We really enjoyed it. A lot of them were comedy based, so we had a lot of fun making it. But really, we made our money through advertising, and which was a lot more efficient, a lot more lucrative. And you know, in the evenings, we would be writing sketches and creating stuff for the BBC shows. It's just, you know, with the size of the population that Australia has and the funding that the ABC has, I think it's really difficult.
There were a lot of ABC people in the audience, though, weren't
there? There were,
and
yeah.
You can guarantee everyone would have gone out of that room thinking, I want to give that a try.
Absolutely. And it's funny, the time we listen to that podcast is probably the time we used to watch a TV program. We'll take the iPad and go to bed early and listen to that. And my wife's really into it now, and she's listening to podcasts all day as well, picking up the kids and stuff. So it's funny how that's taken a different time of our day away from television.
And the funny thing is, well, people, they either, you know, most people just don't know the podcast, but those who do are such passionate champions of it as well, you know. So, because I found, you know, normally if someone interesting is sort of, you know, media type is over, you know, from the US or whatever, we'll try and do a video interview with them. But this one, I just thought, I like it so much, I don't want to spoil it by making it a work thing and doing a video interview or whatever.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So yeah, just went along as a punter.
Yeah, know? No, it was great. It's a fantastic show, and I'm very happy to promote it to everyone.
Is there, Ralph, is there much advertising in podcasts? Do you get much requests for requests?
We've done a bit. Most of the advertising takes the form of almost like a live read.
Right.
So the host will say something, or someone from the show will just do a very simple message. I think that it's going to be increasing advertisers. Well, they're going to be required to fund a lot of these podcasts. And doing an audio pre-roll, I think, you know, listeners accept that this content is coming to them free, so there's a trade-off. So to have an ad break in it, I think is a natural progression, as you do in your podcasts.
Well, that is all we have time for today in this very podcast. Thank you very much to Ralph.
You're welcome.
To Robin.
Cheers, Tim.
And to Colin.
Thank you.
The Mumbrella Cast was recorded in the studios of CBS Interactive. See you in a fortnight's time. Toodle pip.
You know, we have a professional on board, so we need to look sharp.
Yeah.
And if you guys do any accents, then let me know.
Oh, yeah. You will be very sure. Ralph,
what
can I get
that?
It could have been Irish, it could have been Jamaican.
That was a
Mongol
of some sort.
Pakistani Irish.
Oh, look at the Irish. Where's my curry?
See,
which merged into Indian. This is great.
That's how it works.
Indian father, yeah. Irish mother. It's perfect.
Ralph, sorry.
Talf?
Tobin. Yes, Tobin.
That's on a Coke. That's on a Coke bottle.
Yeah,
sure. You
can get a Talf.
Yeah, merged the word TV with Ralph somehow. But yeah.
The entire song of Barbie Girl, done by Jungle Boys.
No, it wasn't Jungle Boys. It was, who was it? It wasn't Jungle Boys. They were the ones who did...
Yes, no.
Yeah, no, who was it? Who did the original?
It was Aqua that did the original.
Yes, Aqua, that's right.
Yeah. Just
sorry,
me, I'm
sorry.
On my facts.
Yeah, sorry, do that bit again. Sorry.
Jungle Boys, okay.
Oh, no, sorry, I see what you're saying.
Yes.
I thought you were mixing up Venga Boys.
Do I do it again, yeah, or do we let
fodder.
It slide?
Yeah,
do it again and we'll drop it in the outtake.
Colin was right.
I was right. Tim was wrong.
Yeah. Include it in the outtake. Okay. Saying those very words.
Okay.
I was right.
Starting again.